Betsy, you may proceed.
May it please the court, I'm Heather Cessna with ABS Legal Services here on behalf of the veteran, Mr. Robert Messier, and we have requested 3 minutes for rebuttal time. What we're here on this morning is a very specific question of law. Basically, what this all boils down to is what is the definition under the Veterans Claimant System of negative evidence? When a veteran is seeking compensation for service-connected disability, the evidence has to show three things. Current disability, in this case, Mr. Messier's current disability was diagnosis of chloracne. Second, they have to show that it was incurred in or aggravated by service. There was an allegation of, in this case, exposure to Agent Orange or DDT. And number three, a medical nexus between those two.
What statutory provision are you referring to?
We are referring to the basic statutory provision for service connection.
But you're not challenging an interpretation of that statutory provision.
What we're challenging is the interpretation of the two statutes, 5107B, the benefit of the doubt or the weighing provision between positive and negative evidence, and how that interacts with the provision under 5103A, D, 2B, which is the duty to assist in getting a medical nexus opinion.
You're not really challenging those statutes or any statutory interpretation. As I read your case, it seems to me you're asking us to assess whether the facts are such that they fall under these provisions or whether the law as applied to the facts would yield a different result, and those are matters not within our jurisdiction.
And let me be very clear about this. And part of the confusion here results from, I think, the fact that both of our briefs are written from a different perspective, because there is a factual dispute underlying this case. However, that factual dispute is actually kind of a distinction without a difference as to whether or not the medical nexus opinion is an actual absence of evidence or negative evidence in this case, unless we have a definition of what the negative evidence is. And we're here under, I think you have jurisdiction to consider this issue under Morgan, which is at 327 F3rd 1357, and its interpretation of 7292A, which basically finds that when the CAVC relies upon an interpretation of the statutes, and we take an appeal or we disagree with the challenge of that interpretation, and that interpretation, if it changes, essentially would have a difference in the outcome of the case, you have the ability to consider whether the CAVC has appropriately interpreted those two statutes.
So what statute is it that you're challenging, and what interpretation of that statute
essentially
makes the difference?
In this case, the CAVC essentially found that there was no real functional difference between whether or not there's an absence of evidence on the medical nexus question or whether or not there's an explicitly negative medical nexus finding in this case. And what we're asking for, and maybe
what
this is 5107B, the negative evidence of 5107B, and how that interacts with 5103A. Basically, what we're asking for is a statutory interpretation that follows basic rules of statutory interpretation, which requires us to look at how you use the common language, unambiguous language in a statute, in the context of the other statutes. You can't look at a statute in a vacuum. And our allegation is essentially that if we read the negative evidence as it's listed in 5107B, as requiring something less than an explicitly negative medical nexus opinion in the context of the medical nexus question, then that's a violation of the VA's duty to assist under 5103A. Am I bringing you along, baby?
I'm not sure you've answered my question, right? What interpretation would you have us make of 5107B?
Well, what we're asking...
It's inconsistent with an interpretation that already exists.
Well, and maybe I should start off this way. The problem here is that we don't have an explicit definition of what constitutes negative evidence in the context of a medical nexus opinion. And that is because this is a proclaimant system. And consequently, we have this interplay between between the benefit of the doubt provision under 5107B and the duty of the Veterans Administration to assist in developing the claim under 5103A. It's our contention. I'm sorry.
Can I just interrupt?
Sure.
You may be able to help me ask this completely new theory.
can go through in kind of order.
First, I'd just like to know this. Your opponents say, look, there is evidence in the record, and the board and the Court of Veterans Appeals looked at that evidence. They quote language on page 10 of their brief, which they say shows that there was a medical personnel who said that those burns are not related, that might have gotten back then, are not related. So I guess my question to you is, assuming for the sake of discussion that we were to say, hey, that is evidence, would all this statutory interpretation stuff be meaningful at all?
Well, I think we need to have a definition of what constitutes the negative evidence specifically. And again, part of the difficulty here is that there is an underlying factual dispute. We're not denying that. We're just saying that that's not a question that we can even get to without having a definition of what that negative, what actually is negative evidence.
And I guess
essentially,
that's my question, which is it the horse or the cart we're trying to put first?
Well, and our convention is that the horse has to come first, and the horse in this case has to be the definition of negative evidence. Because if you don't know what negative evidence is, then how are you going to be look at 5107B and that weighing provision, whether it requires more positive evidence or negative evidence, or whether there's basically an equipoise of evidence, if you don't know what negative evidence is?
What
essentially,
are you proposing here? I mean, what, do you have a definition of negative evidence?
In the context of the medical nexus opinion, what we want this court to find is essentially that the only thing that can qualify as negative evidence of medical nexus is an explicit opinion from the VA examiner on his medical nexus opinion that actually says, no, this is not related to service. And the reason is because of 5103A, 2DB, which requires that there be a medical opinion on the nexus question. And
but
maybe
it's the veteran's burden to establish a basis for a claim.
Well, and let me go through.
So it's not the government's burden to prove the absence of a claim.
This is a proclaimant system. There is an initial burden under 5107A that talks about that the veteran has to present a and support his claim for benefits. And clearly in this...
You're not asking us to change that.
No, not at all. In this case, Mr. Messier clearly made that claim. And that triggers a general duty to assist under 5103A, which is kind of the basic duty for the Veterans Administration to assist the veteran in developing his claim by getting his service medical records, things along that nature. As you get those records in and you begin looking at those, if the evidence indicates that there may be a nexus, and that's under McClendon and 5103AD2B, then there's kind of a more specific duty of to assist in that instance of getting an opinion on the medical nexus question. Clearly, in this case, Mr. Messier met all the way up to that burden because there was a medical opinion that was required in this case. And the problem here is that there were several different things that were alleged in this specific case as possibly underlying his current disability of chloracne. And basically, the medical opinion came back and said that his current disability of his current skin condition was unrelated to a skin condition that had manifested itself as a result of a cryocyte burn while he was in service.
There was a failure on his part to establish the necessary nexus.
However, there was a second allegation. His second claim was in regards to exposure, which he presented sufficient evidence for of exposure for Agent Orange or DDT for the medical examiner to have been required to determine whether or not his current condition was related to service and that exposure. The problem is that in this examination, and like I said, this is part of the underlying factual dispute that makes this a little bit difficult to comprehend because,
well,
as I said, we have to get to
not
the...
Not only difficult to comprehend, difficult... virtually impossible for us to decide.
Let me finish my thought, and then I can kind of address that in a little bit better detail. Basically, in this case, what you had is the medical examiner failed to make an opinion on this explicit medical nexus between his current disability and his exposure to Agent Orange. Now, there's the factual dispute between Mr. Messier and the Secretary as to whether or not, because the examiner actually mentioned Agent Orange in his opinion, whether or not that opinion was an explicitly negative opinion on the nexus question, or whether or not that was an absence of a negative opinion on that specific question. However,
isn't that really what this case is all about? You don't like the fact that the service connection was denied based upon the fact that there was an interpretation of this examination as being inconclusive on the exposure to Agent Orange, and that strikes me as quintessentially fact.
The problem here is that the CAVC essentially found, in their opinion, that there was no evidence of a nexus between his current disability and service. And the problem here is that in and of itself basically found that a negative finding on the nexus question was basically equivalent to not making a finding. There is a difference between not having a finding that it's related and whether or not you have a finding that explicitly says it's not related. And the problem here is that if you have a finding that doesn't explicitly say, yes, it is related, or no, it's not related, then that triggers the duty to assist.
Or what about a finding that's related to something else? Doesn't that
not if they don't address the specific question. I mean, just because, for instance, I mean, if I go in and I say that I hurt myself and I think it might be related to this particular incident, but there's another possible incident there that the vet has made the claim on, and it's clearly in the record. Under 5103A2DB, the medical examiner has a duty to look at that possible cause as to the nexus question. And if they fail to make an explicit finding on that, making a finding that it's not related to something else doesn't mean that it wasn't related to this over here.
But wasn't there some affirmative finding here as to what it was
And that's, there was, partially. There, like I said, there was partially in this case two different possible bases for this. There was the exposure to the chlorocyte burn while he was in service, and then there was also the possibility of Agent Orange exposure, DDT exposure. And there was an explicit finding on the burn, but not on the Agent Orange.
Wasn't there a further finding that this was somehow related to a condition under... I guess the statement was neurotic excoriation. By having an examiner look at that, make a conclusion of that, is that not a conclusion?
Well, and Your Honor, I guess this is what we're getting to, is that there, the factual dispute about whether or not that opinion actually is an explicit finding on the Agent Orange question is a question of fact that we can't get to unless we decide what is negative evidence in the context of these two statutes. Negative evidence in these two statutes, and this is what we're asking this court to find, has to be an explicit negative finding on the medical nexus question on the evidence that the examiner was supposed to be looking at.
What you're saying is if an examiner looks at something and says, this medical condition of which you complain is likely caused by X, you're not satisfied unless that examiner also says, and not anything else. It's not enough to say it's caused by X, or we suspect it's caused by X. In your view, it's still insufficient until they say, and not anything else. Is that it?
Let me be careful about how I answer this, because we're not asking that the examiner just be able to rule out absolutely everything else that could possibly come up. I mean, there has to be something in the record, and that's part of their duty to assist. That's part of their duty to develop that record, is to come up with, and in this case, Mr. Messier specifically asked them to look at the Agent Orange question, which they failed to do. If there's something like that that meets that basic burden under McClendon, then there has to be an explicit finding on each of those things, yes.
But doesn't the finding as to what the cause of his condition is take care of any number of possibilities? I mean, it's like, you know, I have a twist of this one thumb, and I have a medical report that says this was caused by something that happened yesterday. It doesn't matter whether my contention is it happened 10 years ago, I have another contention that happened in a car accident 15 years ago. All of those are taken care of and disposed of by a medical report that says it's based on something that happened yesterday. Am I wrong about that?
Well, in this case, I get, the problem here is that when there's a finding that it's not related to what happened yesterday, then it leaves open this whole realm of, well, it could be related to something else, but we don't know because there's no specific
finding
on that.
It didn't happen yesterday. We have a medical finding.
That's what I'm saying. That's why we're talking about specifically the definition of negative evidence as opposed to positive evidence in this context.
So you're saying that finding was not adequate under what you think the definition of under the statute is?
What we're arguing is that under the statutory interpretation, when you read 5107B together with 5103A, negative evidence of medical nexus has to be explicit, because anything less than that triggers that duty to assist again in getting an opinion that's either a yes, this is related, or a no, it's not. If you've got something in between that, then they have to go back and basically remand the case for an opinion that says yes, it is, or no, it's not connected.
All right, I think we understand your position. You've used all of your rebuttal time, but I will restore 2 minutes if you need it.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
Let's hear from the government.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Ron Morgan. I'm an attorney with the Department of Justice, and I represent the Secretary of Veterans Affairs this morning. Let me just start at the outset by pointing out the things that the court has already observed. The question of service connection is a question of application of law to fact beyond the court's statutory jurisdiction. The sufficiency of the evidence is a question of law to fact, which is beyond the court's jurisdiction. Whether the duty to assist has been violated is beyond the court's jurisdiction. And whether the benefit of the doubt rule has been applied is also outside the court's jurisdiction. So the only thing that remains within the court's jurisdiction, arguably, that is set forth in the appellant's brief, appears at page 11, where, and I will just quote from the brief, it says, consequently, the veteran asked this court to find, as a matter of law, the CAVC may not affirm the BVA's denial of a veteran's claim for benefits based upon an absence of evidence. Taken to its logical conclusion, what that means is that if the claimant fails to prove his case, the claim cannot be denied.
Yeah, but that doesn't answer our question about whether or not we have jurisdiction.
I agree.
We might say, and we might agree with you on the merits, that the statutory construction they're proposing is overbroad, even ridiculous.
That's correct.
But that doesn't go to the question of why we wouldn't have jurisdiction.
That's a separate question. You're
right. So
the first question.
Why don't we have jurisdiction? If they're proposing that their read of the statute, that we ought to interpret the statute to require that the government come forward with affirmative evidence disproving every allegation made by the claimant. Again, irrespective of the merits of that dispute, why don't we have jurisdiction to say yes or no?
Your Honor, we maintain you do not have jurisdiction. Let me clear that up. The only arguable basis for jurisdiction is a decision of this court in Morgan, which says if there was a rule of law which would have changed the outcome, and that's what, to the extent that I understand the argument, that appears to be what is being argued here. Now, the problem with that, it also seems, is that...
Can I interrupt you? Because
certainly, sir.
I'm not sure I understood the answer
to
Judge Crow's question. I think, if I've understood it correctly, it's a question in my mind as well. Before you start talking about something else, please explain why there's no jurisdiction. If the question teed up by the appellant is, you need to interpret this statute to require the government to give a medical examination which will explicitly address every contention raised.
Your Honor, I don't think that question has been posed to the court. But if we assume that it has, that's not what the statute says. That's not what's being asked here. Instead, what is being asked here, at least
so
to the extent that I understand
not what
it.
The statute says, are you saying that is a matter of statutory interpretation?
Well,
court jurisdiction?
If the court reads the appellant's position as amounting to that is the question of statutory interpretation, then the court has jurisdiction. I don't understand
well,
the appellant's brief
I
raising
answer,
that.
Answer, you know, give you an answer. Other than your own, but I thought the government's position might be that even if we read the complainant as saying
we want you to interpret the statute that requires an affirmative evidence disproving every contention made by the claimant. I thought you were then saying that that still doesn't give you jurisdiction in this place because it still, it also has to be outcome determinative.
That's correct.
In order for us to have, is it your view that in order for us to have jurisdiction over a statutory claim, that our review of that statutory argument has to somehow be outcome determinative?
No, Your Honor. In order for the court to review a rule of law claim under Morgan, that has to be outcome determinative.
And your view is that, that our review of the question that we posited here, the statutory construction question,
yes,
is not outcome determinative?
That is correct.
Because?
Because the findings that would be required, that is this quote-unquote negative evidence, is present in the record. But in order to determine that, you've got to go back and examine the facts. So we're in that mad cycle again. Everything that has been posited in this brief is dependent upon a factual evaluation of the record, which the court has expressly acknowledged it doesn't have jurisdiction to do.
No, it isn't. I mean, the pure statutory question, leaving aside whether or not it would change the results of the case, the pure statutory question is whether, as I said, outside of the facts of this case, does not require that.
If the court can read that in here, and it is purely a question of statutory interpretation, I will concede that the court has jurisdiction. That does not appear to be what's set forth in
the
brief.
Well, why isn't it the sentence that you brought our attention to right at the very beginning, where it says, as for the finding of matter of law, the CAVC may not affirm EBA's denial of veteran place of benefits based upon an absence of evidence?
Because
they're asking, said another way, that the statute does not permit the denial of a benefit for claim based on an absence of evidence. In other words, it requires affirmative evidence to be brought forth by the government.
Your Honor, that is then shifting the burden to the government to disprove the claimant's claim, to
You're
disprove the evidence.
You're taking issue with that interpretation of the statute. My question is, why isn't that an issue of statutory interpretation? You may be well be right. You would say there's no way you could construe the statute that way. It makes no sense. It's unfounded. But you would have jurisdiction to make that determination, do you not?
Your Honor, if we take it as purely an academic question of whether there is jurisdiction to interpret the statute, clearly there is. The way this argument is framed, or this issue was framed, however, it says whether the CAVC may affirm the BVA's denial, the claim, which is predicated upon the absence of evidence negating such claim. That then requires the court to go in and determine, is there factual evidence? If there is a factual question at issue, the court doesn't have jurisdiction to make that factual determination. If I may,
how would we ever reach the question of law presented?
Your Honor, in this case, I don't think the court can.
Not in this case, in any case.
In this case, if the question becomes one of whether the government, in reading this, reading the...
Because the question of law as posed includes the statement that whether the board's denial of a veteran's claim for benefits based upon an absence of evidence. The question in all cases presents questions of sufficiency of evidence.
That is exactly right, Your Honor.
So are you saying that the question itself is fundamentally beyond our jurisdiction
to
address, even as a question of law?
It is. It is.
But is your additional argument in this case that it doesn't matter because it wouldn't affect the outcome?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Here, this question is not applicable to this set of facts because there was affirmative evidence put forward by the government.
That is correct.
So that this issue doesn't even exist, basically.
That is correct.
There's another way to read this question, and that is simply to seek an interpretation of the statute in terms of the obligations a veteran has to present evidence and make a case, not addressing the specific facts or applying facts to the law of a specific case, but simply on the legal question of what showing must a veteran make in order to establish a case.
In that situation, Your Honor, I think you would have an appellate seeking an advisory opinion, which the court doesn't have jurisdiction to do. There has to be some case or controversy here. Exactly. That's right. But if it was outcome determinative, then it doesn't seem, under the facts of the case, it would be advisory. But here, that's not the case.
How would we ever determine whether something's outcome determinative without looking at the
if
facts?
You would, if, so, Your Honor, if you would...
come full circle back to the same...
Your Honor, that is exactly the problem that we have been struggling with from the outset. But here, we don't need to get to that.
But there could be a case in which we would get to it when there is no... The record is devoid of any...
That is a possibility, Your Honor, that the court could. But the question then becomes, how does the court overcome the factual determinations? Because then, at least under this set of circumstances, you have to take it as a hypothetical. If it's taken as a hypothetical, then it would be seeking an advisory opinion, which the court has said it's not going to do. Your Honor, this is taking Mr. Messier's arguments through their logical extremes almost appears to impose upon the government an affirmative duty to disprove, that is to prove a negative regarding the elements of the claim. That clearly is not the standard. Moreover, it appears that the argument is such that if Mr. Messier initially made an argument which is some evidence.
At this point, are you now arguing why the statutory interpretation proposed by the other side can't possibly
be right? Yes, sir, I am. Because what would happen there is that would, in effect, shift the burden. I mean, there is no shifting of burden here. The claimant has the obligation from the beginning through the conclusion to prove the elements of his claim. Back in July, the court decided a case, Cromer. And in Cromer, the records were destroyed in the fire, and the appellant maintained that there should be two presumptions. First presumption is that the government was negligent, and second, that the records, if they hadn't been destroyed, would have supported the appellant's position. The court said that amounts to a shifting of the burden, which this court cannot do. Moreover, what the result that Mr. Messier argues in this case is contrary to the express language of the statute. And it's further, and I believe we pointed out in the brief, it's contrary to the legislative history of the benefit of the doubt rule and the duty to assist. In 2002, when that statute was enacted, the legislative history says this doesn't change the burden. The burden rests with the claimant from the outset. Moreover, there's no claim that, and if you look at the record, clearly the government provided and fulfilled its duty to assist. Moreover, if you read the hearing officers, if you read the transcript of the hearing officer didn't identify it. Is this specifically limited to Agent Orange? He said, what is the source of your skin condition? Is it service-related? So the VA took the broadest possible view of Mr. Messier's condition. Remember, there were two claims. There was a claim back in 1988 that says that my skin condition is related to creosote exposure. He was discharged from the service in 1970, and his discharge physical shows skin condition is normal. It's not until 1979 that it becomes manifest. The determination of neurotic excoriation is in the express face of the medical history, which talks about, number one, the exposure to the herbicide, Agent Orange, and or DDT. There is then, after that assessment, there was a comment, and the comment says, in essence, I also find it's not related to the creosote exposure during service. The government has taken, and the VA has taken, the broadest possible view of Mr. Messier's skin condition and made its express determinations. That express determination was his skin condition as a result of neurotic excoriation. By the way, neurotic excoriation the underlying definition of that is there's no known physical condition of the skin to cause this.
So is it fair to say that the position you're taking is that the statutory interpretation question posed is, in this case, purely hypothetical because there is negative evidence here?
That's correct, Your Honor. Moreover, if you go back and look at Forsey, which is the case I believe that was being referred to, the definition there, it says very specifically that since the definition of evidence encompasses quote-unquote negative evidence, which tends to disprove the existence of an alleged fact, this negative evidence, in fact, has been presented. But it's even more basic than that, Your Honor. The question becomes, who has the obligation to prove the plaintiff. That rests squarely with the appellant. It never changes, and it's been satisfied in this case. If the court has no further questions, I just refer the court back to the brief.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Morgan? Ms. Sesta?
I'll try to keep this short since I did go over time, and you were gracious enough to give me a few seconds here to respond. when we're talking about the burden of proof, and my background is in criminal law, quite honestly. And in any other area of law, including criminal law, if the state doesn't present its case, or if the defense can basically disprove the case, or the state doesn't put enough evidence to support its case, then either way, the state loses. That's because in those kind of contexts, absence of evidence and negative evidence are essentially the same thing. But this veterans claimant system is a pro-claimant system. There is a duty to assist. While the burden is on the vet initially under 5107A to present and support his claim of benefits, there is a duty to assist on the part of the VA under 5103A and 5103AD2B to assist the veteran in developing that claim, because all of the evidence that is necessary for the veteran to develop that claim is in the possession of the VA. So the veteran has to meet that threshold, and under McClendon, it's very clear that that is a very low threshold to get to the point where we have to have a yes or no medical nexus opinion under 5103AD2B. But once you get over that threshold, we have to have an opinion, and anything less than that is a failure on the duty to assist for the VA administration. And basically, in that context, you have to keep going back until you get a yes or no. And we're not asking that there's some kind of a finding of yes or no to the service connection question that is 99% sure. That just has to be a more likely than not opinion. And if it's so close that the VA examiner can't make a medical nexus finding one way or another, then the benefit of the doubt provision under 5107B applies, and the benefit of the doubt goes to service connection for the veteran. So while we can stand up here and talk about burden of proof, the fact of the matter is that in this system, because of the duty to assist, the VA has to help that veteran develop that claim. And that's where I think our disagreement is with the state. Now, as far as whether or not this is going to make a difference in this case and whether or not you have jurisdiction, the fact of the matter is that the way that the state is arguing this jurisdiction question requires that the only way that you can find that this question of law isn't going to make a difference in this case is if you make a factual finding that the underlying evidence in this case, which is something that you don't have jurisdiction to do, is negative evidence as opposed to whether or not it's negative or an absence of evidence on the medical examination question. That is another question for another court on another day. What we need is, because there's not an explicit definition of negative evidence in the veterans claim system, we need an interpretation of how those two statutes interact with each other and define negative evidence.
All right, thank you very much. We have your case. Case is submitted. Next case.